For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, pleased to be with you for the next couple hours talking about the Winnipeg Jets, looking back at the week that was, the one game the Jets played, a victory, of course, on Thursday night in Detroit, and a look ahead to what will finally be a busy week for the Jets with four games between now and the end of next Sunday evening. Good morning to so many of you in the chat room. So many new faces, so many familiar faces. We always appreciate your support. Smash the like button. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to our YouTube channel. That way you get alerted each and every time we go live, be it with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday mornings or the Illegal Curve Post Game Show after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. Gentlemen, good to see you.
Or cooking breakfast with Mandel. Don't forget about that one.
Yeah, Cooking Breakfast with Mandel is a fine show. My wife usually handles the Saturday morning breakfasts, and she did another great job this morning. Well, the kids and I played a spirited game of Quidditch in the basement, you know, so things are off to a rollicking start on this Saturday morning in Shea Mandel.
So we got to ask what you had for breakfast, though. I'm curious to know. I think a lot of people are.
French toast. We have Laura makes fresh challah every Friday. So
nice.
We on Saturday mornings, we alternate between French toast and pancakes. So this was the French toast.
I like week. It.
Yes.
You know that I like that just because it's carbs. And that's all I eat. So
carbs with some sugar when you add the syrup and everything. Yeah.
Any lefties?
So, you know, none for you. So don't think about the coming by. So just want to nip that right in the bud so you don't have to worry about that. Dave, you're welcome anytime, as you well know.
Yeah, I was going to say, as he breaking into one of our houses is enough.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need him to infiltrate both of our bubbles.
Come on, Drew, call him back at your boy.
Too much. Yeah, that's very clever there, Mr. Ginsberg. Good to see you, gentlemen, on this Saturday morning. I'm excited for the week because it's good to get sort of back into what should be a little bit of normalcy. It's sort of been odd. I don't know if anyone else, you know, agrees or disagrees in the chat, and you can talk about it there. This last month, because it's now been basically a month that the Jets really have been on this intermittent, sporadic schedule at best. Yeah, there were the three games, when they went out west to Arizona and to Vegas and to Colorado. But it's just been this bizarre sort of lull of a month where I haven't really been able to get into all the other games going on. When you're in that flow and you're in that routine, you're sort of more attuned to everything that's going on. I'm excited for this week because hopefully that means after this week and then come February, there's going to be a little bit more normalcy in what we expect for the Winnipeg Jets and the schedule and the viewership and things of that nature.
We talk a lot about how players are creatures of habit. Well, everybody is a creature of habit, right? Like whether you're like us in the media, if we're allowed to say we're in the media, I'm not sure if if we're allowed to say that, but you know, whether you're a fan, whether you're a coach, whether you're an official, I mean, once you get into, you know, the thick of the regular season schedule, You want to have a game, you know, if it's not every couple nights, it's every three or four nights. Of course, you like to have, you know, the odd break, the holiday break. But you're right, Drew. This is going to be the first week in which it's going to feel, I think, like a quote-unquote normal schedule. And then we'll find out, you know, I'd imagine at some point next week, guys, we'll find out if those home games at the end of the month on the 25th and the 27th against Florida and Vancouver are going to happen. But, I mean, we talked about it on the post-game show, like, this is a very crucial part of the schedule for the Jets. And obviously it's not ideal that you're on the road, but the Jets know, you know, that it's not ideal for all teams. It's not like they're the only team facing this, right? I guess the Canadian teams definitely, you know, face some different adversity than the American teams without fans. But I mean, you're going up against some of the good teams right now, and you can say whatever you want about the Nashville Predators. They're 11 points ahead of the Jets and they do have more games played. I think they've played four more games than the Jets. But still, I mean, they've developed a nice little cushion there, and they're at the top of the Central Division. Whether you thought they were going to be or not, they are. So, I mean, the Jets are facing a good Predators team. And the good thing, Drew, the nice thing for the Jets is, the Capitals are dealing with some injuries and they have a back-to-back this weekend, right? We're going to have Samantha Pell of the Washington Post on in the second hour, but Washington's got a back-to-back today and tomorrow. So the Jets are going to be facing a team, you know, that is a little bit tired, even though I don't know how much, you know, stock you can put into that. Hopefully the Jets are going to get some bodies back. We're not sure if DeMello and Harkins are going to be available for the Jets. I don't know if they've announced anything, but those guys could be back in the lineup. But hey, in the game against Detroit, guys, you know, Dylan Samberg, Declan Chisholm, Austin Pagansi, those guys stepped up. So even if, you know, Harkins and DeMello aren't ready to go, we know that there are other guys that are more than happy to take their spot.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be fascinating. I think the Jets practice, if I'm not mistaken, is it 11 a.m. this morning, Dave M? You would know better than I would off the top of my head.
11
a.m. So, of course, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be an interesting practice just to see who's on the ice. You know, who of the Jets are, you know, might look like they might be on the verge of returning. Could we possibly see Blake Wheeler on the ice this morning? You know, we know he's been skating and we know that this upcoming road trip was, you know, almost a bit of a target, or they'd been mentioned as a possibility. I mean, what does that do for the Winnipeg Jets? I think the Blake Wheeler question, because, you know, he hasn't played under Dave Lowry yet, I think is one of the most fascinating sort of subplots as we maybe begin to get into the, let's call it part two of the Jets schedule this year, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because there's so many guys in the COVID protocol. DeMello and Hart played, but I'm saying, like, you know, you don't even know what was going to happen. There's so much uncertainty going into that game against Detroit. And even like when I was writing, I was kind of doing the morning papers and the practice report, getting it ready for today. And I was looking at it, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, so Ehlers went into protocol on the 10th. Then you had the four, you know, Reichel, Heinola, Stanley, and Beaulieu. Those four went on the 11th. Then you had, I think, Stasny on the 13th. Then you had Dylan and Comrie on the 14th. I mean, it's just.
Sorry, I just realized I said DeMello and Harkins. I was.
Yeah. I don't know what you were talking. I didn't want to correct you because it's too early in the morning for me.
Of course they played against Detroit. I'm sorry, guys. I think what I was in my head, at least, I don't know what is going on in my head, but I think what I was thinking was more so Stanley and Stasny, because I believe they would be eligible to play Tuesday. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. I mean, like I said, it just goes to show you how many guys are in. And the truth is, those guys were both obviously game time decisions, you know, because they hadn't played and because they were fresh. I mean, think about it. They weren't even with the team, right? They both had to fly from Denver on separate days just to get to Detroit. So, I mean, and that's just what I'm saying. Like, the reality is Ehlers, I think it's 5 days. So Ehlers in theory could maybe be at this practice, I believe, obviously, provided he's fine and he's tested okay. And then tomorrow they're off. So on Monday, they'll probably have, and that's the last day of practice in Winnipeg before they head to Washington. Yep. Like, then you might have a whole glut of guys back, because you could have Ehlers and you could have the other four. You probably, I don't think, would have Stasny eligible, and I don't think you'd have Dylan or Comrie. But those guys, most likely, those three, I would imagine, plus obviously goalie coach Wade Flaherty, would be able to fly and meet you either in Washington or, you know, the next game after. So it's such a fluid situation. In addition to, like you said, Drew, Blake Wheeler dealing with his injury. And I asked Dave Lowry about that last week. And I said, like, what, because we hadn't heard anything. The LTIR had expired in terms of his eligibility. So, but there were no updates. So he said he's back skating. And, you know, that's kind of the first we had heard that he was back on the ice skating. And he said it's funny, because I went back and I listened to what he said. And he had said that they hoped that he would join them on the road trip. So my guess was he wasn't ready. Blake Wheeler won't be ready to necessarily, we don't know. Right. But oh no, definitely. I didn't get the impression he was playing this road trip. My impression was he'd be in a non, because Mike McIntyre asked a follow-up question to mine, asking whether he'd be in a non-contact on the trip. And then Dave said, yeah, no, the anticipation would be he would join them at some point on the trip. So my expectation for Wheeler was he wouldn't be coming when they left on Tuesday. Maybe he would join them later in the trip. The other thing is Dave Gustafson, who I think Mike asked about on the road because of all the uncertainty with the bodies. And of course, Dave Lowry said he's away. I think it was an old Claude Noel, a ways away. Comment. So I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. And yeah, that's why these practices are so interesting to watch, because the Jets, of course, kept Declan Chisholm and Dylan Samberg. They didn't reassign them to the Moose. They reassigned four players: Austin Bogansky, who didn't play last night, and then Arvid Holm. Who else did they reassign? There's so many guys: Jeff Malott, and they reassigned Mikael Burden to the taxi squad. So I mean, like, and there's one more player that I'm definitely missing, and his name will come to me in one.
It's a fluid situation, is what it goes. what it boils down to is that you almost held your breath every day.
Oh, Simon Lundmark.
Simon Lundmark. There you go. I mean, to be, you know, how many people knew that Simon Lundmark came up at the last minute there prior to the Detroit game on Thursday, where you're like, is there somebody else who's going to be out of the lineup? And that's just, you know, the reality of where the Jets have been right now. And think how sort of fortuitous it is, the timing wise, that with all these guys who are entering into the protocol, that it's happening in a time frame where the Jets play one game in the span of a week. I mean, imagine this is next week when you're in the midst of the four games in the six nights, starting on Tuesday in Washington. It's a whole different story. You might be playing shorthanded for two, three, four games as opposed to just the one game so far that you were really shorthanded for on Thursday in Detroit. A game we have to mention, of course, that the Jets were victorious in one of, I think, their most complete efforts as of late, and the prototypical perfect road game where you keep it simple, you capitalize on your opportunities, you are very tight defensively. And I thought the Jets, you know, if they could bottle a road game, you know, they would probably want to bottle Thursday's game because it had a lot of good in it. And that's not easy necessarily for a team that is going through so much roster upheaval and is going through everything else that comes alongside that, where you might not necessarily be familiar with the guys who are you're playing with or the guys who are next to you on your line. You know, I thought it was a very important win for the Jets in a game where they could have theoretically had all the excuses in the world, and they didn't take them at all.
Exactly. And, you know, it's hard to talk about that game and not talk about, you know, Sandberg and Chisholm and Pogansky, like we talked about off the top of the show, right? But you do have to also just focus on how well they played, the regulars, right? And Andrew Kopp being right at the top of that list, right, guys? Guy who stepped up and had a really good game in his home state. And, you know, we can't, forget to mention Connor Hellebuyck as well, right? Like we talked about, it was one of those low event games. And Connor as well, right? So, I mean, but Hellebuyck has always responded well after a bad loss, right? And 7-1, I think, last time I checked, that counts as a bad loss, right, guys? So, I mean, Hellebuyck deserves, you know, just as much credit as anybody. It's obviously not an individual sport, but, I mean, he was really, really good. So I think, you know, when you look at this game, you'll always remember, you know, the fact that the Jets had so many guys in the COVID protocol, and you'll always remember how impressive Sandberg and Chisholm specifically looked on the back end. Like they are veterans at this point, right? Like we talked about that. These aren't 19 or 20 year old defensemen. Like Sandberg, you know, has won national championships. Chisholm, you know, tore up the OHL with the Peterborough Petes, right? So these guys have been good players for a while, but they've just had to wait their time and, you know, develop in the AHL. So I think you're really happy with the way they played defensively, and just they played smart, right? Like, yeah, you don't like, you know, you took some penalties, and, you know, a few of those I think were maybe of the softer variety, if you want to say that, but still they killed them off, right? What was it? Five penalties that they killed off.
Five penalties, including five, the so, five I on mean, you three like that. Slash six on three.
Right. So that was huge, right? There was a little bit of a push there at the end from the Red Wings. I don't think any of us thought, you know, the Red Wings had any business really being in this game, because it easily, you know, could have been 4-5 at that point. But, yeah, I think you like that victory, and, you know, you go back and you practice now, and you know that you have four tough games coming up. And I'm not saying that the Jets can't win the majority of these games or all of these games, but I think these guys know that, you know, whether a guy like Logan Stanley's back in the lineup or whether a guy like Nikolai Ehlers is back in the lineup, they know that, you know, all they can do now is control what they can control, and they have to keep, you know, banking those points. Because as we talked about, Minnesota won last night, Colorado won last night, Minnesota 7 points ahead of the Jets, same amount of games played. So, I mean, the Jets are in chase mode. This isn't, you know, 2017-18 where they were a 114-point team. I mean, this is a team right now that has to scratch and claw for every point that they can get.
You look at the standings, and I mean, I, you know, and obviously it's probably a little too early to be, you know, overwhelmingly focused on the standings because there's still, you know, the Jets still have another 48 games this season, assuming they get all 82 in. But the way Minnesota's playing, and they certainly don't look like they're going away anytime soon, and the top, and Minnesota's not even in one of the top three spots in the Central Division. That's Nashville, St. Louis, Colorado. They've just been juggernauts basically all season long, and they, you know, there's a significant gap between those, sorry, the top three in the Central. And then Minnesota's, you know, within striking distance, only a few points behind them with some games in hand. It really looks like teams like Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Dallas, you know, San Jose, maybe to a bit of a lesser extent, they're all battling for one playoff spot right now. They're all battling for that second wild card spot. I mean, because even in the some of the Anaheims and the Los Angeleses aren't great, and they've played a lot of games, but that's the Pacific Division. The Pacific Division is as it usually is, which is not that great, meaning you got a lot of teams that qualify in the top three spots in the Pacific that might not necessarily, quote-unquote, deserve it. But the standings are what the standings are, and the playoff format is what the playoff format is right now, and the Jets are certainly in that log jam. They are right next to Calgary. I mean, there's a point between the Jets and Calgary, and the points percentage is that close. Edmonton is right behind them. They continue to struggle, but if Edmonton ever gets a goaltender, what happens with them? Dallas is still sort of right there next to the Jets, you know, a couple points behind. Then there's a bit of a gap between Vancouver and San Jose still there as well, but they've played so many more games that, you know, assuming once these teams catch up, they're going to leapfrog the Sharks. But there's not a lot of breathing room, and we've talked about that, you know, the Jets squandered so much of the 9-3-3 when they went through their lull, which led to the, you know, with Paul Maurice departing as head coach, that they're now sort of, it's an uphill climb, and it's really going to be probably an uphill climb for the remainder of the regular season, Dave.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it. Like when you had that run early in the season, you built yourself a cushion, but you've squandered it. And now the game's become a lot more tight. And you look, you're not sitting there and you're saying, look, we have to, like you said, Drew, there's still a lot of season to go. So you don't have to be, you know, super concerned about it. But you can't squander points. You just can't afford to have nights off. You can't say, well, we didn't give a full 60. Because the reality is, as you've outlined, you know, there's essentially one spot, and the Flames have hit a bit of a dive right now of late.
Yeah, they've lost four in a row.
And the Oilers, obviously, we know their struggles because the power play isn't producing at over 50%, and it's not covering up some of their flaws. And they're not going to have Mike Smith for at least another 3 weeks, or 2 or 3 weeks, I should say. So
good news about Alex Stalock, though, Dave.
Yeah, great news about Stalock for sure. But you know, and I'm assuming he's going to need some time to.
He's gone. He's had to pass through waivers to get.
Well,
to
he was put on waivers yesterday, so he hasn't passed through yet.
Well, and
so
assume he goes through, then he'll begin sort of a rehab stint in Bakersfield. So he's
Drew, for anybody who isn't familiar, he was dealing with a heart condition, so he's been out for a while.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. So it's good to see that his career it looks like it's going to be able to.
Resume. Well, yeah, especially given the fact that he was supposed to be done for the year. So it's definitely a very good story there. And then he got clearance by the doctors to get back into game action. So that is a really good story. But I mean, like, you don't really have, like, there's not a lot of space, right? Because the Blues look like they're way ahead. I mean, they've got, like you said, games in. They've played a lot more games. The Jets have games in hand. But the truth is, as Ezzy just talked about, this next 4-game stretch, you're not playing bottom feeders. They're all playoff teams. You have to, like, gone are the days of the luxury of not performing your best. Like, you need to do that. And so, like I said, we've seen young guys come up, play hungry, and get into the lineup and do, like, you got a guy like CJ Cease using every part of his body to block shots. You know, Dylan Samberg, again, you know, we saw him on the PK. It's funny because, like, what's the one thing under the kind of the Paul Maurice era that we didn't see was trust in players who played a role in the AHL, get that same role in the NHL. So you would use a player who's maybe not to the same ability, but because they have years in the NHL, you give them that faith. Well, what do we see in Dave Lowry's, you know, the Dave Lowry era? And part of a function, part of this function is, you know, he doesn't have a ton of options. So sometimes, of course, and like I detailed on the last show, coaches' hands are often forced by injuries. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, he had some sort of inspiration. But the reality is, he thought to himself, Dylan Samberg kills penalties in the AHL.
Yeah.
He can do it in the NHL. And so what do we see? Dylan Samberg blocking shots on the PK. I'm just saying that, you know, using guys in roles that they're suited for. It's like, I mean, look, we talked about it. David Gustafson's not coming back anytime soon. David Gustafson, to me, would have been a pretty good option, you know, in a penalty killing role. Ironically, unfortunately for David Gustafsson, the truth is he and Christian Michael actually form a phenomenal tandem in the AHL. So I'd be curious to see if they would have used, you know, a Lowry Kopp tandem as their top, top pairing, and then gone with a Reichel.
I think what's happened here, Drew, is Dave has secretly slipped into a Minute Moose Minute.
Let me say something about the penalty kill.
Drew, one second. These guys are all Jets right now, so I'm talking Jets.
I mean, you talk about the penalty kill, though, and I mean, you know, we saw it perform on Thursday night, you know, 5 for 5 in terms of killing opportunities, including that lengthy 5-on-3, which the Red Wings elected to make into a 6-on-3. I don't think you can talk about the recent success of the penalty kill and not mention the impact that Kyle Connor has had on that penalty kill, because that's a fascinating development that Kyle Connor, who, you know, most people thought of as a bit of a one-trick pony, an all-offense kind of guy. Of course, you know, offense with, you know, superstar levels of goal scoring, which is what he has. I mean, you look at the last number of years, and when you're top five in goals for, goals scored in the NHL, you're a superstar. But, you know, his efforts on the penalty kill have been one of the more fascinating developments, because I don't know anybody who saw Kyle Connor and said, yes, that's a guy who can be an asset to the Jets on the penalty kill. Well, he has been, and he's been tremendously effective, and the penalty kill itself has been effective as a result.
Yeah, and we've seen Connor on the penalty kill earlier this year and previous years. It's not like that was the first time, right? But to your point, Drew,
he's not to any consistent base.
No, he hasn't been a regular penalty killer, but he was one guy that we've talked about over the years that because of his skill set, like we know the speed and the hands. I mean, the thing with Connor is that's going to benefit his even strength game and his power play game as well, in the sense, more so, you know, even strength defensively is what I mean, guys, because, you know, it's going to turn him into a more well-rounded player, like you said, Drew, and he has been, like, let's be honest here. But the one thing, or not the one thing, but the offensive side of the game, if you want to say that, if you want to kind of simplify it into offensive versus defensive side of the game, I mean, that offensive side of the game is, as you mentioned, he's a top 10 goal scorer, maybe even top 5 goal scorer in the NHL right now, right? But just having him out there, I think, first off, it allows you, I think, to be a little bit more aggressive. And we know that Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry, for example, those are guys that can create odd man rushes on the penalty kill, right? Like, we've seen those guys get their chances shorthanded. But Connor, I mean, if he, you know, we know that once he, you know, breaks away, nobody's catching him. So I like that. I mean, you know, is he going to have to block some shots? Yeah, you're going to have to block some shots on the penalty kill. I know, you know, Connor blocking shots is a bit of a weird idea for some people, because like you said, everybody kind of just views him as this kind of transition player that scores off of the rush and everything like that, or on the power play, right? So I'm with you, Drew. I like it. I mean, and he's been good, and we'll see how much he's used. I don't know if he's going to be used as much as he has been, because as Dave said, I think they view David Gustafsson, whenever he gets back, as a penalty killer. And obviously, you know, Connor is going to be on the top power play unit, but there's no doubt that he has added a different dynamic. And that dynamic is a lot of speed and a lot of skill, and it's making him a better defensive player.
It really has, and it's made the Jets. I mean, I look back, it's only 4 games, because the Jets have only played 4 games since December 20th. But you look at the forwards in terms of time on ice and the penalty kill, it's Kopp and Lowry. Kopp at 2.5 minutes per game played, Lowry at 2.16, and then it's Kyle Connor at 2.03. So there's not even a huge gap between Kopp and Lowry and Connor. I mean, there's a huge gap between Connor and the next player, and that's Paul Stastny and Dominic Toninato. So, you know, Kyle Connor as a penalty killer, I think, is to me one of the most interesting developments over the last month or so. And, you know, going to be fascinating to see how that continues, especially as the Jets get back to full health. But given the success as of late on the PK, I see no reason why that's necessarily necessarily going to change or anything like that. So, you know, a fascinating subplot, I would say, between now and, of course, the next little while for the Winnipeg Jets as they head on to their 4-game road trip. Washington on Tuesday, Nashville on Thursday, and then Pittsburgh and Boston on the weekend. When we come back, Paul Edmonds, utility voice on Twitter, Winnipeg Jets radio broadcaster, is going to join us for some more Jets talk. Stay with us. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platform. And shortly before the bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Our good friend Paul Edmonds set to join the program in a couple of minutes. Let me ask you guys this question. Maybe we'll even talk to Paulie about it. when the Jets are back at full strength, of the current forwards who are in the lineup, which one, you know, that haven't been what I'd call regulars this year, which one could you see sticking around the most? Do you think there's a role for Cole Perfetti on this team after everybody's back and healthy for the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about full health, I think, you know, Cole Perfetti is the one that just stands out because of his size, pardon me, his not size, his skill and, you know, his goal scoring ability and playmaking ability for that matter. But it's hard to say right now, Drew, because, you know, we don't know who's coming back when and in those games what players are going to do, right? But I think, you know, yeah, I would say Perfetti is probably, you know, at the top of the list. But, you know, going back to, you know, Dave talking about Christian Reichel, like I've liked him with Lowry and Kopp on the third line. So it's really hard to say right now with all of the players out. But I think, you know, what stands out again about the game against Detroit is I think Dylan Sandberg and Declan Chisholm coming in not the easiest situation. You know, I think right now has shown that these guys are maybe more NHL ready than we thought. Not to say that, you know, the Jets organization didn't think a guy like Sandberg was ready, but Chisholm, for example, I think really impressed some people that weren't really familiar with his game.
Bring into the program our very good friend. He's getting set up. It looks like he might be even in the Matt Frost Media Center, if I can identify a ceiling correctly. It's our good buddy, Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on CJOB Radio and Power 97, for that matter. Paulie, good to see you, buddy. Long time. How's it been?
Yeah, really good, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm down at the Media Center. One of the things that we have to do here all the time is we have to test. So there's a testing window every morning, and that doesn't matter whether they're playing or not. So I try to get here early, and it just so happens that that jives with the time that the Illegal Curve guys want me on. So here we go. Let her fly. Let her buck, as they say, outside the Perimeter Highway.
Perfect timing, Paulie. You know, it's been such a sort of fascinating last month or so for this Winnipeg Jets team. They've had so few games, I believe four games in total since the 20th of December. They've obviously gone through a coaching change, and you know, Dave Lowry has had this unusual amount of practice time in order to sort of get acquainted with the team and establish sort of his raison d'etre as a head coach for this Jets team. You know, you're so close to the team. You know, how has the vibe been for the last month, given all the uncertainty, the COVID protocol stuff, and just the lack of actually any games to speak of?
Well, I think there's an excitement here because a coaching change warrants that. If you're not excited about what's going on and how you need to play, because the onus truly is, I know it's cliche, guys, but after there is a coaching change, it is on the players. I've said this before. I'll say it again because I firmly believe this. Dave Lowry owes these guys nothing. He doesn't owe them ice time. He doesn't owe them rules. He doesn't owe them certain situational play. He owes them nothing. You have to earn it again. Now, certain guys are going to be cast into that role or never eliminated from that role. It's just where they are. But, you know, as we've seen, Josh Morrissey's ice time has gone down and been reduced a little bit. And Logan Stanley prior to COVID was up. Same with Neil Pionk. Is Neil Pionk leading the team in average ice time per game. You're also seeing different situations on how maybe Scheifele's being used. So there's all kinds of things that go into this. So there's not a genesis, not a rebirth, but there's a freshness to all of this that has happened with this team. And I think in one respect, things happen for a reason. I firmly believe in all of that, that with the COVID situation that's gone on since really the holidays that have postponed all kinds of games up to this point, now Winnipeg's going to get in it pretty good next week. And then presumably those 3 weeks with the what was the Olympic break now being in the rescheduled dates, there has been a lot of time for Dave to put his stamp on this team, to get them to play the way he wants them to play with some of the ways he thinks they can be better with the personnel they have. That kind of time normally isn't afforded when you're going every second night or every third night and then back to back. There's travel involved and not a lot of practice time, and then the mandated off days per month. So this has been one of those unique situations where it's been kind of bizarro world for what has gone on. But right now in the current, you know, real time moment, there's been a lot of extra practice time to instill the pace of play, the style that he wants, and some of the tweaks that he's made so far in his short time as the bench boss of the Winnipeg Jets.
And Paulie, you mentioned, you know, travel, and we mentioned, you know, you're around the team, and we have to ask you just what is it like right now with all of these moving parts? Because I can't imagine, you know, what it was like for Jets management to deal with the game against Detroit, the lead up with the uncertainty of who's coming back and who's in COVID protocol, who's out of COVID call. Like we were trying to kind of figure out like which players are even options for the game on Tuesday night against Washington. I think Nikolaj Ehlers, for example, like he can't actually, unless I'm mistaken, Paulie, I don't think Ehlers can come back into Canada until right at the end of the road trip, right? I think it's the game against Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken. So just what's it like with, you know, players in Colorado and Michigan, and, you know, some players are back in Winnipeg, but they want to connect with the team. Like just how kind of, you know, crazy and unique of a time is it right now?
Well, Ehlers, I believe, tested positive in Winnipeg, so he's here. But you are right. There's still some guys that are stranded down south, south of the 49th. And for me, that's the biggest fear, right? It's not really testing positive for COVID because you're triple vaxxed in my case. And, you know, it's just maybe being trapped away from your family for those 14 days. But it has been rather chaotic. I mean, from day to day, literally minute to minute, sometimes you wonder what's going to go on. And this has permeated right through, and Dave could speak to this as well. This isn't just a Winnipeg Jets situation that you have to deal with. This is organizational-wide. I mean, you go down and pluck a couple guys off the Moose, well, they've got to replace those guys. So then they're reaching down in the East Coast Hockey League. And with the volatility that we've seen with the roster on the Jets, I mean, that's disrupted the roster equally proportionately for the Manitoba Moose, because each guy that goes down here, you pull a guy from the Moose. You have five guys go down here, you pull five guys from the Moose, right? And it just so happened that it kind of, again, we get them back to this happenstance thing. You come back to the situation where they go into Detroit. Well, the Moose happen to be in Milwaukee, not that far away. Their next game's in Grand Rapids, not that far away. And ironically, Detroit's AHL farm team, right? So it's kind of worked, you know, for them in this chaotic time. But it has been really, I mean, you know, get the program. Let's get the name tags out. You know, hello, my name is, right? You know, and get the, there's lots of Sharpies to go around. So we just need the name tags, right? But it's been like that. I mean, Ezzy, it's been... If nothing else, it's been interesting because you never know what's going to happen from the morning to the afternoon or for the afternoon that day to the next morning, because it just changes so rapidly here with testing. But at this point, and I can honestly say this, there's been, I think, 15 to 17 guys touched by COVID on the Winnipeg Jets at this point, maybe including a couple of Moose players or guys that we would cast as Moose players right now. I mean, it's going to run through the team at some point. It's not going to have anybody else to touch at some point. I mean, it's gone through half the support staff as well. So, I mean, at some point, it's going to get through all of everybody that's associated with the team and the travel party, and then you're probably not going to have a conversation about this again.
Well, I guess one of the benefits is after you've had it, you don't have to get tested for 90 days. So it gives the Jets a bit of a window in that regard. One of the other side benefits we're seeing, Paul, is these young guys getting an opportunity. And you're right, the Moose have been ravaged. They're missing 15 regulars from their lineup right now. I think they have a few back, but for the most part, about 15 guys are either up with the Jets or out with, on COVID protocol for them. So they too are dealing with it. But the benefit is we're seeing young guys get opportunity. And Dylan Samberg, after the high ankle sprain on day one of training camp, you know, he's been really good for the Manitoba Moose. And then he looked, you know, we were always wondering, what's he going to look like when he makes his jump to the NHL? Declan Chisholm, an amazing skater. But what's he going to look like? Is he going to be able to bring that offensive touch he has in the AHL? Will he be able to transition that to the NHL? Well, we saw them in game one, and you don't draw too many conclusions after one game. But isn't that interesting how this is work, kind of, like you said, happenstance? It's working out that players are getting opportunities that they might not have had till maybe later in the season or even next season.
Where do you think Declan Chisholm was on the depth chart only maybe even last season or this spring? I mean, I remember a story talking with Ben Sherrod, who was drafted by the Atlanta Thrashers. And he said he comes out of the OHL and they end up sending him to their affiliate and then eventually gets to St. John's. And at one point, before he gets to the Jets, a couple of years prior to that, he's looking at the depth chart and he says, you know, on the blue line, I'm like 16 or 18th on the depth chart. I'm never going to get there, right? And sure enough, one guy leaves, another guy gets hurt, some guy signs over in Europe, whatever it is. And then you get some injuries. That rash of injuries that the Jets had 5-6 years ago on the blue line through October, November, December.
The Jay Harrison era.
Right, yeah. And here you are, Ben Chiarot's playing on the left-hand side with Dustin Byfuglien all of a sudden, right? I mean, kind of a dream come true. And then he's never looked back. Same thing here for Dylan Sandberg. And I was right present in front of or behind the boards when he went down with that leg injury. It was kind of a end of practice one-on-one battle kind of drill. And he went down and, you know, he was really good the other night in Detroit, Dave. And then the other thing for Declan Chisholm as well. And, you know, and the reason I bring up Ben Chiarot is Ben Chiarot was drafted 120th overall, and he thought he was 16th or 18th on the depth chart. Declan Chisholm was 150th overall, so that might put him a little bit further. But here he is. And, oh, by the viewing of what we saw the other day, the Jets are in really good stead with their organizational depth from that standpoint, because you had two defensemen that are similar in a lot of ways in the fact that they looked both very poised on the ice, the way they played and the way they handled the puck and moved the puck. But they're also two different left-handed shot defensemen. You've got Sandberg, that's that bigger body and kind of developing maybe a bit of a nasty side in his game, but certainly an adept shot blocker, as we saw on a couple of those power plays for Detroit on the penalty kill. They had him out there. I think he blocked 5 shots in the game and a couple that stung him, but he stood back in there the next time. And then Declan Chisholm, the way he moved the puck and sauntered through the neutral ice and just has that crisp adaptability to handle the puck and sort of an offensive side. You can see that layer to him. So, you know, two guys that are coming up that aren't opposed in terms of how they play the game. There's some similarities, but there are some unique differences to them. And we got to see that exposed. So it's wonderful to see these guys. And I think it's a testament to the way that this organization has been structured for the last number of years, not just the last couple of weeks, not just the last year, but the last number of years where they've played the same system. So it allows these guys to come up, shake off some of the nerves, understanding exactly where they need to be in the AHL and the NHL. And at some point, I think, as Paul Maurice has always said, he said that it's easier for you to come up to the A to the NHL sometimes under a system like that when it's consistent and there's vertical integration all the way through, because guys are actually in their spot in the National Hockey League and sometimes they're not in the AHL. But what we saw from those two guys, I think, was just excellent and simply real good drafting and a real good future for the Jets. And I think the future has arrived. It's not down the road. It's here now.
Paul Edmonds is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching, you're listening, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. You know Paul, of course, is the radio voice of the Winnipeg Jets. He'll have the call of Tuesday night's game between the Jets and the Washington Capitals with our friends on CJOB and Power 97. You know, Paulie, one of the most fascinating sort of flips of a switch, let's say, for this Jets season so far, in my perspective, is the play of the penalty kill as of late. Since December 1st, the Jets penalty kill is 7th in the NHL at a success rate of 26.8%. And this was a penalty kill that before that, you know, couldn't go a game without giving up a power play goal if their lives depended on it. You know, to that point, I want to ask you about the impact of Kyle Connor on the penalty kill. This is a guy that nobody really had pinpointed as a penalty killer. All of a sudden he's playing the third most minutes on the Jets penalty kill of the forwards. What do you think the impact of Kyle Connor on the penalty kill has had?
Well, I mean, and those numbers would be better too, Drew, if it wasn't for the fact that they got blitzed for 3 goals in Colorado as well on the power play for Colorado and on the penalty kill for the Winnipeg Jets. So, I mean, those numbers would be a little bit more flashier. Well, I think what you're trying to do is when you want that passive aggressive power play, penalty kill, passive in the sense that sometimes you're not going out of your lane to maybe put pressure on somebody, but aggressive when there is a puck bobble or a missed pass or something, you want to get on that puck. Mm-hmm. So from that aggressive side, what better to have maybe the fastest guy that you have on your team than Kyle Connor to get at that loose puck? So I think that's the correlation. That's why you see what's going on with the penalty kill and some of these guys being used. Now, this is not the first time that Kyle Connor has been used in the penalty kill role for the Jets. This goes back a few years as well. the only thing that you worry about is getting in a shot lane and having a guy like Kyle Connor block a shot and then missing 17 games with some sort of an ankle problem. That's the only drawback, right? But in saying that, I think if you can avoid that, because you are pressuring wherever the puck is, that pressure point where the puck is on that power play for the opposition, then you've got an opportunity to get the puck. And when you get it turned over, the transition now becomes maybe there's an opportunity for an offensive chance shorthanded. And I think that that plays in the mind of the power play as well. I better not make a mistake with this pass, because this guy's got the ability to knock it away, get pressure on me. And then if I'm flat footed and I turn it over, I'm not catching him because he's going to go all the way. And I think there's an ability that that is kind of innate in Kyle Connor to kill penalties. All these guys, all these skilled guys, coming up through the ranks, whatever it is, youth hockey in the United States, minor hockey in Canada, you played both. I mean, you played power play, penalty kill.
Oh, looks like we may have lost Paulie to some technical difficulties there. So hopefully he'll, Ezzy, you're muted, can't hear you. So hopefully we'll get Paulie back.
I was going to say, it's just buffering. I don't think we've lost him yet. Got a buffering situation.
There we go.
There you go. He's coming back in this one.
I told you.
There you go. You're back, Paulie.
Still got apologies.
It's okay.
Yeah, anyway, technology. I think that kind of sums up the answer for you from the standpoint that I think that's one of the reasons why the Jets have been a little bit better on the penalty kill, is they've had some veterans come back in that stable, and some of those guys have killed penalties before. And now you've got the speed factor and the quickness factor from a guy like Kyle Connor, who can play that role and then also be a little bit more dynamic and put pressure in a situation like that, where if you make a mistake, he's going to capitalize on it.
And just one thing to add, Paulie, and I think you'd probably agree with this. Like, a lot of people were talking about this on our post-game show, and I imagine on the CGOB post-game show as well. Like, Dylan Samberg coming in there and basically looking like a 10-year veteran on the penalty kill. Like, it was just so fun to watch him because, you know, it was really impressive. Dave has been talking about it all year long. He does it with the Moose, so nobody should be surprised that, you know, he gets a call up in his first NHL game, and, you know, Dave Lowry puts him out there on the PK. So I want to definitely give him a big shout out. Paulie Edmonds just shrunk a little bit there and then went back to buffering. So hopefully we're going to get him back here. I'm not sure if you can hear me, Paulie, but I wanted to ask you about Cole Perfetti next, because you mentioned, you know, the future is now. I don't think Paulie can hear me, but I think we might still have him back. There we go. Paulie, I'm not sure if you heard that at all, but I was going to ask you about just Cole Perfetti.
Yeah, I kind of did.
No worries, Paulie. What have you seen from him? I mean, obviously, you know, he got the two games early in the season, but, you know, what have you thought about the last two games? The game against Colorado, obviously, it was a tough one to evaluate him, but arguably his best game of the year against the Red Wings.
Well, I heard the question about Dylan Samberg, and I think that, I mean, this wasn't a departure at all for him to go from killing penalties with the Moose to killing penalties with the Winnipeg Jets. And not only that, but I think there was a 6-on-4 situation, 6-on-3 situation.
I heard you on the broadcast, there. extra attacker.
You know, I mean, it was pretty good. I think that the trust that they had immediately in that big body there, and like I said earlier, in an answer, when you're blocking shots like he was and having no fear, who better to put in that situation? Now, just by stature, being 6'4", he's a big body. So you get in the lane, and if you're not afraid of blocking a shot, it's pretty hard to get the puck by you. So from that standpoint, I'm not surprised that there was a lot of trust that was shown on Dylan Samberg on his debut night. And I think that, like I said, the future is bright for the Winnipeg Jets when it comes to the blue line. And now the questions become, where do you put all these guys, right? Like, if you're deeming that they're ready to play, and they can...
Oh, the beauties of technology. That's certainly affecting us.
I think too many people in that Jets media room, in the Matt Frost Media Center, are stealing.
Yeah, come on, Paulie. Who's eating up all the bandwidth down there?
I saw Mitchell Clinton walking around there. I think he... Tell him to get off his Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Paulie's doing a legal curve here. We need a crisp Wi-Fi connection.
Well, we lost Paul now. Now he's
officially gone. Dave, maybe you have to, you know, drive down there and, you know...
I would, but I can't leave you alone in my house.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody was going to leave you unattended.
All your beer and chips would be gone for sure.
I find you like in my bed, like eating chips. It'd be the worst.
He's taking a nap in your bedroom. You come back.
You just see people be like, why is Manuk burning his bed on the front lawn? Like,
well, Ezra, did you take a bubble bath while I was gone?
Okay, here comes Paul.
There you go. It's okay, Paul. We know that it's not personal, that it's a function of the technology that we're
Mitchell,
dealing
tell
with.
Mitchell Clinton to stop stealing your internet.
What's going on, Mitch? Come on.
Well, you know, I had it, honestly, I had it on LTE and it was full bars. So I don't know. I mean, that should be really good. So I've actually flipped over to the Wi-Fi and it seems to be working. Who would figure that? So let's just get back to your question on Dylan Sandberg. I mean, I think there's been a lot of trust. I was kind of broken up and I probably sounded robotic there. But there was a lot of trust that was shown in him in that situation. And, you know, again, that comes back to the layers of what you're creating between your organizational depth. It's the same structure, same penalty kill. We want to be passive aggressive. So he understands it. So now it's not a departure from going from the AHL to the National Hockey League about where you need to be and what you want to do. And at 6'4", that's a big body. And if you're in a shot lane and you don't mind blocking a shot, I mean, nobody really truly likes blocking a shot. Let's face it, right? But when you are trying to earn yourself a full-time job in the National Hockey League, you're going to get in that lane and you're going to stop that shot. And then you're going to do it again, as he did. So I think that this is wonderful for guys like Dylan Sandberg and Declan Chisholm to be able to kind of show their wares, you know, you want to buy a watch, you know. So from that standpoint, I mean, this is kind of exciting for Jets fans and certainly for everybody else that goes through the organization and even the younger guys that are saying, okay, well, maybe I'm going to get my chance. That don't think that message doesn't get lost on guys that are waiting their turn as well. Now, the question is, and you guys can ask these questions coming up, where do you find room for all of these guys and what happens in the very near future to try to fit in Declan Chisholm and Dylan Sandberg on your blue line, especially on the left side where you've got quite a few guys, you know, Morrissey, Dylan, and Logan Stanley, all tied to contracts, and two of them lengthy contracts, and one guy being an RFA.
And you didn't even mention Ville Heinola. So you're right. There's a glut of defensemen on the Jets back end.
Paulie wanted you to mention him, Drew. That's what he was
well,
doing.
Well, there you go. It was a setup. That was a seamless transition. I appreciate you sort of teeing me up for that one. And let me hit it out of the ballpark there, Paulie. Paulie Edmonds, our guest, Saturday morning. We're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Paul, of course, is the radio voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You hear him each and every game day on CJOB and Power 97.
You know, Paul, as he was asking you, he was going to try and sneak in a two-parter, I think, in his last question to you. So I'll snag part two because I'm curious your thoughts. You know, Cole Perfetti early, you know, the first couple of games of the season, you know, not easy in here. You know, a lot of he's the weight of expectation, right? 2020 first rounder, and everybody's expecting him to be something. And now he's being put into a different role, right? A different opportunity playing on that second line. So what did you see in that game? Again, one game, so we obviously it's limited in that situation. But what did you see from Perfetti the last couple of games, I should say, you know, in a more elevated role? And how do you see this playing out with him for the remainder of the year?
Well, there was a quote that he had that I thought was really bang on and precise to where he wants to get to. And that was going into the Colorado game, which for him was game three of his National Hockey League career. And then we've added one more on in Detroit. So it's four games now. And, you know, I think when we put these young guys that have a lot of skill that are first round draft picks in anything less than the role that they're accustomed to, then it's really hard for them to develop. I mean, yes, you want to have a defensive side to their game and you want to be able to trust them with their defensive play, but they are there to make plays. And he said, you know, if I'm not playing my game, trying to play my game, and that's part of the identity of who he is, and that's making plays, then he said, quote, what am I doing here, right? Like, what's the point? So I think they've got him in a situation where he can succeed. I think, honestly, we're seeing incremental improvements in where he's supposed to be and just a little bit more comfort with the puck. But I honestly believe he's trying a little bit too hard and he's trying to impress a little bit too much. And when he gets in a spot where it's the side of the slot or in the slot, don't defer, shoot the puck, mm-hmm. son, mm-hmm. right? And that's going to come. And then, of course, he's pointless in four games that he's played, so that's going to build on him. But I do think that we're seeing slowly and assuredly through four games him getting to his game and getting more of a comfort level there. And he will be a top six player for the Winnipeg Jets, whether that's going to be on the wing or at center where he came up through Major Junior. We don't know that yet. But this is a guy that I think has larger expectations for himself than even the organization does right now. And he probably just needs to take a step back, take a breath and understand, hey, I'm here. I'm not getting sent down for a while. I've got an opportunity. And that will come in terms of the points. But I saw a little bit more of him being in the right spot in Detroit, sometimes mishandling the puck or maybe overpassing, but still being in the right spot of where he's supposed to be for that play to happen for him to handle the puck. So I think there's still way more to go, Dave. Way more upside for Cole Perfetti. I mean, we haven't even scratched it right now. But I think before you get to that, he has to get comfortable in that situation. And I'm starting to see that a little bit more. And him thinking that he doesn't need to always make that super impression with every shift that he goes out and takes for the Jets.
You know, Paulie, we'll let you go on this last question. I know practice is in about an hour, and I'm sure you got a lot of prep work you need to do before that. Jansen Harkins, you know, last year was such a weird year for him where it was stop and start and stop and start. He was on the taxi squad for so long. There was no real rhythm, I would say, in his game last year. This year, he's played in 33 of the Jets' 34 games, so he's become a regular, and it seems like he doesn't have to worry. You know, sometimes the coach calls you in and tells you you can go, you don't have to worry about renting a place, you can go buy a place instead for the next little while. You know, how do you think just that being in the lineup on a consistent basis has impacted Jansen Harkins and his ability to sort of carve out a specific role for him on this Jets team this year?
Well, if you ever want a guy to develop, and if you ever think that you want to develop on a team and you wonder where you fit in, when they put you with Adam Lowry, you know you're in a pretty good spot. You know, I mean, when you think of the guys, Yoel Armia, Mason Appleton, Andrew Kopp, I mean, the list goes on, Brandon Tanev. Well, that's where they got him, and that's a real safe spot for a guy that has a layer of offense to his game. One of the things we haven't seen, and we did see it, he arced off the boards, I'm trying to think, maybe it was in the Vegas game, or one of the games prior, where he arced off the boards and scored his last goal and just had a great shot. And
Vegas.
And you thought, yeah, it was Vegas. You thought, okay, this is the guy that we were expecting to see, and there is that ability in him. So I think that, you know, he's a full-time guy. So that's in the background in terms of worrying about whether you're going to stay and always having to make that impression with every shift. So he's got through that. And now I think he's still a young guy. I mean, he's early 20s here, and there's that opportunity for him. He's a bigger body. He skates pretty good. He's got a great shot. Now he's going to kind of learn and through osmosis be helped out through Adam Lowry, who's pushed a lot of guys up and maybe out to bigger contracts. He should probably get a little bit of, you know, finder's fee money from some of those guys that he's helped along the way. But, you know, I think Jansen's in a good spot there. Will he be a top six guy on the wing at some point? I don't know about that, Drew. But I think that if you have three really good lines as they have built here, and maybe some could argue four, Jansen Harkins providing some offense like Andrew Kopp has done over his career, where he's got to, you know, 10, 11, 12 goals a year, and now 15 last year, and looking for a bigger budding contract after this season as a UFA. Jansen Harkins, I think, can kind of fill into that sort of same role as what we've seen with Andrew Kopp over the years. That's kind of where I see him being placed, killing some penalties, getting an opportunity at some point in the power play down the road, but also being able to inject some offense and what you would call that checking role on that third line. And I think that there's just nothing true about a checking line anymore, especially when you play with Adam Lowry. There is that ability to have some offense and contribute that way. So that's Jansen Harkins for me. I think that depending on what happens with Andrew Kopp, and let's look at him. I mean, he's UFA at the end of this year. If he moves on, that allows Jansen Harkins to move up that depth chart in the same vein, that same sort of scenario as Andrew Kopp has played for the last number of years for the Jets.
Paul Edmonds is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on CJOB Radio. He'll have the call of all of next week's games as the Jets head out on the road starting Tuesday night in the U.S. nation's capital. Paulie, it's good to see you, buddy, even if it's only through a computer screen. Hopefully in person again soon, bud.
Yeah, good to see you guys. Sorry about the technical issues. Thanks a lot for having me on. Anytime. Ezra, you've got my number.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's great to have you on, Paulie.
It's great to have you back, Paulie.
Nice to see that. Thanks, your guys. Sense of humor hasn't dulled at all. Thanks, Paulie. Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. See you guys.
There he goes, Paul Edmonds, joining us this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Always a good time to get together with our buddy Paul. Let's take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois, his next contract. What are you comfortable in seeing that number
cha-ching, at? Cha-ching, cha-ching, back up the Brinks truck, baby.
Okay, well, that's weird. Thank you for that.
For Pierre Luc, not me. I mean, I'm not getting any money.
Oh, Pierre I thought Luc you were is. Demanding that we start paying you. No, in something other than hamburgers.
No. I'm good. I'm glad that I just get anything. I'm just glad that I have a place to go because Naomi's told me that she doesn't want me in the house Saturday morning. So I'm just happy that we still have this outlet.
Right, but when she said that she doesn't want you in the house Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, Friday morning, and Sunday morning, did that
That's when I just feelings? Drive around River Heights, like, that's good. Like endlessly. I just go, I just hit. First off, I start with the tree streets, ash, oak, elm.
Okay.
Then I make my way to the university streets, Cambridge, and then I eventually get to Oxford.
There you go. Thank you, Ezzy. Thank you for updating us on that. Stay with us. Ezzy's going to be crushed by a piano. Everybody enjoys it. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. It's Saturday morning.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg are with you. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We remind you, Tuesday night, following the Winnipeg Jets and the Washington Capitals, the Illegal Curve post-game show will be live back here on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, smash the like button, set a reminder so you don't miss any of the great Illegal Curve programming we have your way. Going to be a very busy week next week, of course, with the games on Tuesday night. So post-game Tuesday night, post-game Thursday night. I see hockey show Saturday morning. I see post-game show Saturday afternoon, and then again Sunday afternoon. So a very busy week upcoming for us after what had been a very light month. I guess we'll be back to being sick of one another in no time flat by the end of next Sunday afternoon, gentlemen.
More importantly,
we're already sick of each other.
More importantly, guys, I see merch.
Dave's.
I see merch.
Stand up, show it off. Pop that collar.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I got some too. Yeah.
The IC merch. I got a box here for Drew. I mean, we got you.
We'll be by to get it later.
Yeah, we got some messages already. Some people.
Oh no, it's been burned, Drew. It's gone.
Oh, okay. I actually gave it to Ezzy, so you're probably going to want to burn it. But
yeah,
just to give a quick update for folks, their deliveries are going out. They've been going out since Thursday. Some folks are going to get theirs today. We had one of the guys in the chat. I think it was Jeff said he got his shirt, so he's wearing his shirt and hats and toques are still not there yet. So we're hoping that those will be out this week. So we appreciate everybody bearing with us. We're happy that the shirts and some of the hoodies, that sort of stuff are getting delivered. But yeah, we'll hopefully have toques and hats coming out. Because trust me, I've got like 4 hats on order and I got a bunch of toques. So I'm as excited as anybody to get the hats and the toques.
There you go. Exactly. So stay with us. And like Dave said, thank you to everybody for your support and your patience. It has been a bit of a longer time frame than we anticipated. Chalk that up to the global shipping issues and things of that nature, the supply chain issues that are affecting basically anything going on in the world. It's hard to get anything within a timely time frame. It's not a really good use of English, but notwithstanding that,
that's crazy. The last 3 or 4 times I've gone to Costco, there's no toilet paper.
What have you been using?
No, I'm just kidding.
Don't answer that question.
Yeah, we're not gonna go there.
Let's talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois. You wanted to talk about this in the pre-show meeting. You know, talk about the contract for next year. Dubois has been terrific for the Jets this year. We all know that he's been he's exceeded all expectations. There were a lot of high hopes for him after what had been a down year last year, and people weren't sure what they were going to get. Are they getting the Pierre-Luc Dubois that is a bona fide number one center? There's a big concern. And so far this year, he's certainly been that, slowed down a little bit as of late, but he's certainly been very noticeable and very impactful for the Jets. 26 points in 34 games played. You know, the salary cap isn't going to go up, you know, by any significant number, if at all, next year, especially with all the setbacks that we've seen in Canada in terms of attendance. So, you know, if the number is the same, it's hard for me to see a way for the Jets to keep both Dubois and Kopp under contract for next year. For Dubois, let's focus on him. What number would you be comfortable with and length of contract? What's your term? What's your dollar value for a guy like Dubois? Ezzy, in the email you sent me, you had a really interesting comparable to a guy like Clayton Keller in terms of their offensive output so far in their career.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Pierre-Luc Dubois is not an easy guy to find a comparable for. It was on Cap Friendly, as you mentioned yesterday, and Keller went 7th overall, and that's why I think it was in 2016, of course. We remember that 2016 draft, which was just absolutely stacked. You know, Matthews, Laine, Dubois at the top, Puljujärvi obviously surprisingly went 4th to the Oilers, but that's why I think Keller is a good comparable, not only because he was drafted in the same year as Dubois, but it's eerie, guys, how close their stats reflect each other. You mentioned, you know, Keller's got now, he had 2 points yesterday, so he's up to 28 points in 35 games. But entering last night's game, he had 26 points in 34 games, exactly like Pierre-Luc Dubois. But when you look at their career stats, you're talking about Keller, 327 career games played. Dubois got 314, so that's a difference of 13, obviously. And if you look at their career points, Keller, 219 versus Dubois, 205. And obviously, you know, Dubois has a few more goals. He's got 89 career goals as opposed to Keller's 80, but very close, guys. And, you know, they're both centers, obviously different players. Dubois more of a power forward as opposed to Keller, who's more of obviously a, you know, skilled kind of playmaking center, but obviously a guy that's got a great shot as well. But I just thought, you know, Dubois and Keller, if you look at not only their career stats, but also kind of, you know, their place in the organization. Keller, you know, I remember back when we were on TSN 1290, it was 2019, Keller signed the deal out of his entry-level contract, 8 years with a $7.125 million AAV. And I remember at the time, it was a little bit surprising that the Coyotes had given him that contract, just because the trend, not only then, but kind of now, guys, is the bridge deal, obviously, right? Like we saw it with Laine, saw it with Dubois. So we should mention that, you know, Keller went right out of the entry-level into an 8-year contract. But I think when you're talking about Dubois, guys, and also factoring in that, you know, a guy like Paul Stastny, I mean, he's towards the end of his career. You know, Mark Scheifele, he's only got a few years left on his contract after this year. I think looking at, 2 years for Scheifele, right? So I'm not saying that the Jets won't re-sign Scheifele. That's not what I'm saying. But you do have to start thinking about kind of who's the future core of this team. And I mean, Cole Perfetti is going to be future core of this team. And we know, there, like you said, Drew, there's only so much money to go around. But, you know, just sticking with Dubois, I think, you know, absolutely a max term is in the cards here. Like, I don't think, you know, the Jets are looking at a shorter term deal. I think, you know, they've seen enough out of Dubois, not just this year, but throughout the course of his career, because this is his, what is it, fifth year in the NHL or sixth year in the NHL. So I think you're looking at, you know, 8 years, and I think you're probably looking in that kind of $7.5 million to $8 million range. I know some people have kind of talked about, you know, $9 million. Maybe he gets, you know, I think that's probably a little bit high. Another guy that I think is going to be really interesting to see how much money he gets on his next contract, I don't know if you guys know where I'm going with this, is Matthew Tkachuk. I think Matthew Tkachuk is probably a better comparable in the sense that he plays more of that physical rugged game. Tkachuk's probably more of a SHIT disturber than Pierre-Luc Dubois is, but Dubois is a guy that isn't afraid to mix it up. I mean, we've seen it a lot over the years. Dubois is a big boy. He's physical. He'll mix it up. He's not a guy that you expect to fight 20 times a year. So I think Tkachuk, it'll be interesting to see what he gets. He makes $7 million a year AAV now, whereas Dubois is at, I believe, five. So I think Tkachuk is probably maybe a little bit more in that $9 million a year range. But again, I mean, I'm not obviously a cap specialist. Richie back in the day was obviously way better, you know, at that. He would break it down and basically get it down to the dollar. But I think Dubois, you're probably looking at something like, you know, 8x8, something like that, $8 million a year max term.
Dave, what are your thoughts? I mean, Dubois is going to be 24 this coming June, so he's certainly not old by any stretch of the imagination. This is a guy who's been, you know, is now a veteran in the NHL. Are you comfortable going a full 8 years for him that should take him into, you know, the early 30s? Or do you think that it's going to be more of a sort of a six-year deal, which is still definitely long-term, but allows Dubois, if he's able to still keep the, you know, keep his performance, you know, to a high level, allows him to cash in again when he's right around that 30-year-old mark?
We probably should have saved this for next week's show, because then it would have been almost a year to the day where we were discussing this on a Saturday morning program here in my maison. We were on the radio still, and of course the breaking news of the Patrick Laine to Columbus.
Seems like it had to have been longer than a year ago.
No,
it's only a year ago. I mean, it hasn't even been a year.
Honestly, maybe we should have Dave. Maybe we should have Sarah on next week, because that's who was on, right? We had her on, and then right after that, the news broke, and then maybe we can get Dregs as well.
Yeah, we can do a reunion show. But no, it's an interesting. Yeah, you're right, Drew, in the sense that it's shocking that it, like, sometimes time flies, and other times you're like, it's only been a year since that trade. It feels like it was forever ago. But
time is a construct.
Thank you, Eddie. So I think you've got a guy who's 23, turning 24, as Drew just said. And you're looking at your center depth, and you've locked up Adam Lowry for five more years, and you have Mark Scheifele for 2 years after this one. And you're not sure what Cole Perfetti is. Is Cole Perfetti a center or is he a winger? Seems like he's trending to becoming a winger at the NHL level. Now, we're not, of course, he's played four games, so we're not going to suggest it's 100% one way or the other, because he still plays, like, unlike with, if you recall with Jack Rozovic, what we saw with Jack Rozovic was he played in the AHL as a center, and then he of course went to the wing probably for his last, I want to say, 10 games, and then all of a sudden you're like, and I remember thinking it was rather curious because he had played in the middle his entire AHL career. So, you know, what does that mean? And Perfetti has played wing, so it seems like he's trending towards being a winger versus a center. So that, and that's fine, but that means you need center depth, because that's what we've talked about. And to me, you have to lock up a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now, sure, this has been a year, and it's a contract year, and you could say he's only playing for his contract, and last year will factor in, of course. But this, at the end of the day, as he said, I think ultimately what you base it on is the totality of a guy's career. And you've had way more good with this guy's career than you have bad. And so, to me, you try and lock him in as long as you can, because he's going to be, I mean, think about it, Drew, 23 turning 24. So when you give him a contract, he'll be 32. Now, let's say NHL guys on average start to decline around 29, 30. Mm-hmm. You know,
you're getting his best years, Dave. You're getting his best years. Like, I think we would all agree that like his best offensive years are to come. They haven't already happened, right?
It's a much better position than to sign him long term, you know, when he's 24, than to sign him when he's 29 or when he's 30, because then you're, you know, very much like the Wheeler contract, and this is no fault of Wheeler himself. You knew that when he signed that extension with the Jets, you'd be holding your nose at the dollar figure for the last couple of years. And maybe it's come a little bit sooner than people expected, but, you know, that was just sort of That was an obvious factor to anybody when that contract, the second that contract was signed, you knew that there were some bad years that were going to be attached to it.
Right. So if I had to guess, I would say he's probably like an 8-8. I think it's a $64 million deal if I was going to guess.
And then they'll whip out the N64.
Yeah, maybe that'll be part of his signing bonus. He'll get an N64. But yeah, I mean, I could see the Jets giving him something like along those lines. Now, of course, I haven't like broken that down and seen how that would impact the rest of the team. But
let's talk about that factor. I mean, in terms of breaking. So, I mean, this is a guy who's making $5 million already. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
that is a generous contract for the Jets. Wow.
Well, $5 million right now, it's good value. Well,
just the way he's playing, I mean, you could argue right now he should be making around $8 million. But again, I mean, I'm just saying that's the $5 million for Dubois is the Jets will take that.
Well, so the question really boils down. So then you got a guy like Paul Stastny whose contract is expiring, and that's at $3.75 million. So
although Pierre-Luc Dubois' number is 80, so maybe he wants 8 times 10.
Well, I don't think he's going to get 8 times 10. Nobody's getting $10 million a year right now, and unless you're a super-duper star, given the salary cap situation. A super-duper star. Yeah, that's right. Not even just a superstar, but a super-duper star.
Yeah.
But, so if you take Stastny's 3.75 and you take Dubois' current contract, boom, you know, that sort of pays for itself. That's, of course, assuming that Stastny's not coming back, which is not certainly something you can easily assume. Then you got to factor in Andrew Copp. I mean, if Andrew Copp is going to get a raise, and he's probably going to get a raise, I mean, if his raise is too high, it just doesn't seem like the numbers are going to work. The math just doesn't seem like it's going to work unless there's a lot of chat I saw in the chat room right now about the Jets subtracting somebody maybe from the back end, given the next wave appears to be even closer than we maybe thought. Does that mean a guy like Nate Schmidt or a guy like Brendan Dillon, depart from the Winnipeg Jets roster sooner than expected? I mean, that, you know, obviously time will tell if that's happening, but it seems hard to believe that unless you're subtracting somebody else off the roster, that there's enough room to keep both Dubois and Copp. And this doesn't even factor in what happens if Paul Stastny wants to stick around for another year.
Yeah, exactly. And the good news with the Jets is their top six defensemen are all locked up, right? Like that's something that, you know, it's a huge bonus for Chevy. But yeah, if the Jets want to keep Copp, there's no doubt, Drew, that one of these players that we've talked about isn't going to be able to stick around, or somebody else's contract. It's like, you know, we talked about Darren Dreger earlier coming on the show when Dubois was acquired for Lion and Roslovic. He always talks about kind of money in, money out, right? And that's the reality, because you're right, the salary cap is not going up. So, yeah, could you possibly move out one of those defenseman contracts? I would agree that, you know, I mean, if you're kind of picking, I guess, you know, Brendan Dillon would be one of those guys, but I think he's played really well. So I'm not suggesting that the Jets are entertaining that thought, but I'm just saying we know a guy like, you know, Josh Morrissey's not going anywhere. Nate Schmidt isn't going anywhere. Logan Stanley, I mean, most likely isn't going anywhere, right? So, like, if you want to kind of play that game, Neil Pionk, yeah, same
Logan,
thing. They just
Logan Stanley is only making $900,000,
well, right? So and Logan, that's why, right? Yeah, because right, so, that's one of the reasons why I don't think he's going anywhere. But
I was just going to say, I mean, it just seems, looking at the number crunch, you know, it seems like if you want to keep the forward group together as it currently is, the only possibility for subtraction, barring something completely unforeseen, like an LTIR situation or a career limiting injury, and obviously we don't hope for that to happen, it seems like the only way to accommodate for that is to subtract somebody from the blue line for next season. Now, it's way too soon to start, you know, pinpointing who that's going to be or how it's going to come to fruition, but there isn't enough money as it currently stands to pay everybody that the Jets, quote unquote, want to pay, if they do indeed want to pay everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing that has to be mentioned here is Jansen Harkins, Christian Vesalainen, those guys are due for another contract. And even though you would say it's not going to be, you know, a huge contract, that adds up, right? Like you can't just look at it like the Jets only have to sign two players, right? Like it's not that. Every year, you know, the Jets have to look at both the UFAs and the RFAs, Dubois and Copp, guys, let's not kid ourselves. Those are the big ones. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there is a good chance that both Dubois and Copp are back. And maybe, you know, Copp isn't able to come back because the Jets choose that they don't want to move one of those defensemen like you talked about. I agree, Drew. I think we're pretty certain, you know, most of the top six forwards or all of the top six forwards I should say top nine forwards are not being traded. So it's going to be tough, but look at, I mean, Andrew Kopp has put himself in that $5 million a year conversation, maybe even a little bit more. He's going to get a raise. So
I know he's going to get a raise, but I mean, and I like Andrew Kopp as a player, but Dave, I would be a little buyer. I mean, Andrew Kopp, you know, what's he making right this year?
3.64.
Yeah. Andrew Kopp at 3.64 is a lot, you know, given the game that he plays, is a lot more palatable than Andrew Kopp at over, you know, at close to $5 million. I mean, I think that, you know, if you're expecting, I mean, it's the, I mean, the truth is that you shouldn't pay your middle class. You should pay your superstars. Those are the ones who you need to keep around. You know, if you can keep Andrew Kopp for under $4.5 million a year, I think you try and do it. But anything over than that, I'm beginning to grit my teeth and hold my breath a little bit.
Well, he's underpaid right now because of the deal he signed. So really, he would be making more than 3.6.
Fine, but I mean, if the offer on the table is 5 years at $5 million, I don't know that he's going to produce that kind of value at that number. I have a lot more time for that contract that begins with a four and probably stays under 4.5 than I do with a contract that is over 4.5, closer to five.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And as Jean-Guy just said, Brandon Tanev got $6 million a season. So I mean, and look what Pittsburgh did. They dumped the contract. So, I mean, you're right. This is where guys get paid and GMs overpay. So I don't think, but at the same time, Andrew Kopp right now is your fourth leading scorer. So that's probably also not to be.
I didn't say, by the way, that he's going to get $5 million. I think that number.
No, I think you're right.
Has been out there as the kind of ceiling. Yeah. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, it's going to be somewhere between $4 and $5 million. We're not capologists, but I'm just saying, a guy that can score, you know, 20 goals, which he's on pace for, right? And a guy that, you know, can kill penalties and can play on the power play. I'm just saying, like, what about a team like Detroit? He's from Michigan.
Well, of course.
I think there's going to be teams interested.
There will be, because he plays a relatively simple style of game. Sorry, Dave, I interrupted you. He plays a relatively simple style of game. He's able to produce. He's not a one-trick pony or anything like that. He's not a black hole in terms of offense. It's just that, you know, there's hard decisions that need to be made by every team in the NHL, and that might be one of the hard decisions that the Jets aren't able to make, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess where I was going is that, you know, if you think about it, you have to think about it from a financial perspective, but you also have to think about it from a, who can replace what he brings? Do you have that? So if you go through your roster and you say to yourself, okay, is this year an anomaly? Is Andrew Kopp really the fourth best scorer on this Jets team? Is he going to be the guy consistently for the next 5 years? If you sign him to that sort of deal, is he going to be the guy who's going to be in your top upper echelon of scoring with Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele? I mean, he's right with Mark Scheifele right now, Pierre-Luc Dubois, those sorts of guys. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be that? Is he going to consistently do that? If he isn't, you know, right now he's got an elevated role because so many issues. Now you have money, right, Drew, as you touched on to open the segment. I think it's one of those situations where, you know, you'll have potentially, like, Paul Stastny is making $3.75 million this year, right? Yeah. So, I mean, the truth is you're going to have money come off the books, or even if they don't come off the books per se, actually Paul Stastny is still having a good year, but you could probably get a reduction in that. You could probably do some tweaking there. Now, like I said, so you have to think about it from a realistic perspective. Now, I've always said David Gustafson is a very similar, maybe not as offensively able as Andrew Kopp, but defensively he is, I would say, not necessarily just as good because he doesn't have the same number of years in the pro game as Andrew Kopp does, but he's kind of that Andrew Kopp prototype. He's got that acumen that would allow him to, again, it's what the Jets have to decide what Andrew Kopp is. Like, yes, it's great that you have a guy who can fill in on the top line or on the second line, but you see him as pairing with, you know, Adam Lowry when your team is healthy. If you do, then you're paying Adam Lowry. Lowry makes what? He makes
3.25
for the next 5 years. Yeah. So you've got Lowry at 3.25.
I still think that that's a great deal for Lowry. I realize some people don't think that
great
he doesn't provide enough.
A great deal for the Jets.
Great deal for the Jets is what I meant.
Yeah. So
that's that, I mean, I'm sure Lowry's not hurting making that money, but I'm just saying, like, even if he hasn't been putting the puck in the net, I would still, I think that's a great deal. Sorry, I've always been a big Lowry fan. I realize he's a bit polarizing because, you know, people maybe want more goals from him, but I think the goals will come. And I think he's just, as Paulie Edmonds mentioned, you know, when he had him on about whatever that was 45 minutes ago. I mean, anytime there's a guy that I think, you know, suits a certain role and you get to play with Lowry, whether it's Harkins or Appleton or everything like that, they always seem to excel.
Yeah, well, I just want to correct something because Brandon Tanev is making $3.5 million. I said six, so I don't know where I got that number.
I think you meant 6 years is what.
Yeah, it was 6 years, but anyway, so the reality
is
you got
your numbers transposed.
Yeah. Honestly, though, just as an aside, Dave, he was really good for Pittsburgh, and before he got injured, he was good for the Kraken. So I have no problem with that deal, actually.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, so to me, like, the Jets as an organization have to decide, what is Andrew Copp to them? Is he going to be a guy you want in that top six? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a top nine guy. I think you need to have three scoring lines. I think most people think that way now, with the fourth line being a kind of a defined checking role, which occasionally contributes as opposed to what it used to be. So, you know, like I said, to me, I sit there and I think to myself, I look at the organization, you know, in totality, and I say, okay, you've got this Moose team. You've got a guy like Gustafson who could fill an Andrew Copp defensive role. No problems. Like, it's not even I don't even have a scintilla of doubt that David Gustafson could become Andrew Copp, a very cheap Andrew
Great
Copp.
Great word there, Dave.
Thank you. So I think it's a function. I don't have any concerns in that regard from a defensive perspective. And now if you think Blake Wheeler is maybe not going to be in your top six, but maybe you're going to have Cole Perfetti there next year, do you need Andrew Copp to produce that offense? You've got Dubois, you've got Scheifele, you've got Connor, you've got Ehlers, and maybe you have Perfetti. And if you need to, Wheeler. So to me, it becomes, and you can also use Stastny in that role, depending if you keep him. So I just don't know what Andrew Copp is going to be for this Jets team. And that, to me, is a question Kevin Cheveldayoff has to answer, and everybody has to answer, because if they know what they want from him. But I mean, I agree with you. You can't hamstring your team. Look how tough they are right now in terms of the cap. Now, we know why they've done that, because of the contracts they handed out to Blake Wheeler and that sort of thing. But it's still the reality. You've got affordable contracts in Mark Scheifele and Nikolai Ehlers. Kyle Connors looks like an affordable contract. You've got young, affordable contracts in these, you know, up-and-coming defensemen, the Sandbergs, the you know, your defense is expensive because Schmidt carries a big ticket. Josh Morrissey carries a big ticket. Brendan Dillon's ticket isn't exactly small either. So you've got guys who are making money, but can you afford it? Can you maximize value best by allowing Andrew Copp? Because this is the window where he's going to get paid. Yep. So yeah, I mean, to me, honestly,
and honestly, he deserves to get paid. Like,
I'm not saying otherwise.
We always talk about these guys, Dave.
Every player deserves whatever dollar figure they can get.
But specifically, if I can say the word, after Dave, you know, had that good word scintilla, which means a tiny amount for those who wanted that definition there. But I think that when you talk about, I mean, this player specifically, Copp, I got off track there a little bit. He signed the 1 year deal and bet on himself. Like, we talked about that. So him specifically, cause you know, Drew, like it's not apples and apples, right? Guys like Copp who are later picks that take a little bit more longer to, you know, I guess whatever develop is the word I'm looking for here. Then, you know, he's a guy that is definitely in line for a 4 year, 5 year deal. So that's all I want to say. We have no idea what's going to happen and if it's going to work out, but I mean, I think there is, like I said, right now I'd say it's kind of 50-50, you know, if Copp and Dubois are both going to be back. Everyone knows Dubois is going to be back, but it's going to be tough because that means that most likely there's a player on the roster now that you're not going to be able to bring back. But hey, that's the business of hockey. So it is possible that a player that is under more than, you know, his last year of his deal is going to have to be moved, whether that's a defenseman or a forward. Right now it looks like, you know, more defensemen are signed long-term proportionally. So we'll see what happens. But he's definitely played well enough, I think, to earn an increase, whatever that is. Salary increase.
Let's take our final break. Samantha Pell of the Washington Post is on the other side to talk about the Capitals, the Jets into Washington to face the Caps on Tuesday night. So Samantha will join us to get us teed up for that game. Stay with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday, the 15th of January. Samantha Pell of the Washington Post, set to join us coming up momentarily, talk about the Capitals ahead of their visit, ahead of the Jets' visit to Washington on Tuesday night. Reminder, post-game show on Tuesday night, so subscribe to our YouTube channel, smash the like button, set a reminder, that way you'll get alerted each and every time we go live for the post-game show or the Illegal Curve hockey show. We're pleased to welcome to the program from the Washington Post, she covers the Washington Capitals, Samantha Pell joins us on the show. Samantha, good morning. Thanks so much joining us. How are things?
Things are good. How about you guys?
We're doing fine and dandy. Clearly, you're wearing the mask. I assume that means you're in the rink because I believe the Capitals are playing back-to-back today and tomorrow ahead of the Jets' visit there on Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually in the office today. I didn't make the trip up to New York just because of that back-to-back here in D.C. tomorrow. So just wanted to play it safe, make sure that we can get back safely here on time. They have a 2 p.m. matinee, so 2 p.m. today and 2 p.m. tomorrow, which is a little odd for the schedule. But Vancouver, I believe, does the same thing today against Carolina. It should be a good one tomorrow and tonight.
And the Jets do the same thing next weekend, as it happens with Boston and Pittsburgh on a back-to-back. You know, Samantha, this Capitals team, you know, year in and year out, they're always right where they're quote unquote supposed to be, you know, battling the top teams in the Metropolitan Division. They're right behind the New York Rangers, the Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes obviously have a few games in hand. What drives this team after so many years of success with their veteran players? You know, they've won the Stanley Cup. Obviously, they're not satisfied just with one, but are you impressed with how consistent they seem to be year in and year out, and that it never requires a late playoff push to get into the playoffs? They always just seem to be sort of towards the top of their division, year in and year out, like I said.
Yeah, they kind of seem to lock it up pretty early, and then we have the last couple months of the season and it seems like they may be skating by, and that's kind of come back to bite them. Obviously, the last 3 years since the Cup, they've been out in the first round ever since. So I guess it's good and bad with that consistency in the regular season, and then when it comes to playoff time, it's kind of a toss-up. I think it all stems from, obviously, Alex Ovechkin. I mean, especially him re-signing in the offseason for another 5 years, that's going to drive this team until he decides to retire and hang up the skates. I think everyone knows that he does want to go after Gretzky, and that's the goal, and he kind of made that very clear after maybe years of pushing it to the side and not wanting to answer it, and then now it's pretty much on everyone's mind. And I mean, the team obviously wants to have success, but also you have to, I guess, look at Alex and what he wants to do as well.
And Samantha, you reported yesterday that Ovechkin was on the ice practicing, but he's going to be kind of a decision today. I guess we'll find out from you a little bit later today, but I wanted to just ask you about, you know, this season specifically, because we know he's right at near the top of NHL points leaders. You're expecting him to always have, you know, the most goals, or, you know, close to the most goals, but so obviously, you know, getting those assists up there. But what have you seen from him that's a little bit different than last year? Obviously, a unique season in which I think many players kind of almost, you know, chalk that up to being a bit of a write-off, maybe aside from the Tampa Bay Lightning. But what have you seen from him? I mean, is it the same old Ovi, or is there maybe a little bit more of a desire to be a more complete player and kind of take this team further in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think Ovechkin's super interesting because early on, I think a lot of people were talking about kind of his conditioning and his off-season workouts and how finally after the last couple of seasons with COVID, they finally got a whole season of an off-season workout and he got to go kind of back to his routine, and it wasn't kind of, oh, when is the season going to start? Is it going to restart? How are we going to do this? What are we going to do? So I think it starts kind of there with the off-season, but I really think it's a mindset. I think he came back, he knows that he, you know, wants to help this team for another 5 years. He feels like he's, you know, still in the best shape that he is. He's still kind of evolving his game. He knows that he has to kind of change some things from when he first got into the league till now. He's not scoring as much on the power play just because the Capitals power play is pretty awful at this point in the season. So he's found other ways to score, honestly. And I think maybe people kind of overlook that when they see him kind of at the top of the leaderboards of, you know, 24 goals. Only a couple of those have really come on the power play. So I just think it's all about his mentality and in his drive, and you know, his teammates are also kind of helping, like, keep that off along the way.
You know, Samantha, one of the things we've seen in the NHL over the last few years is more of a move towards a tandem, not here in Winnipeg, of course. Connor Hellebuyck plays the majority of the games, but I was looking at the splits in Washington, and it's almost even. So how is that working for the Capitals? Obviously, it's working fine because they're winning, but And do they have a plan? Like, do they have a guy who, when the playoffs come around, you're going to be the guy, you're the guy who's getting the majority of the starts?
Yeah, I would say actually the tandem isn't working very well at all. They are winning, like you see Samsonov's record, BTech's record, they're both fine. But at the end of the day, they're both not, I don't think personally, what the Capitals need in the playoffs or kind of to finish out the second half of the season. I think they're both really shaky and the coaching staff hasn't seen that consistency that they've been asking for really since the beginning of training camp. It seemed like at the beginning, Samsonov was going to be the guy, and all of a sudden Vanecek comes in better shape. He looks better. He plays better and he takes the reins for the first couple of games. So really from the beginning, it's kind of been a toss up between these two young goaltenders. And Samsonov did do back-to-back shutouts there in the West Coast a couple months ago. But ever since then, I believe it was some crazy stat of like 9 of the next 12 games, he allowed 3+ goals or more in his start. So I actually think that goaltending tandem is not working. And they're going to have to figure something out pretty quick here.
Well, to that point, Samantha, obviously Brian McClellan, has been the general manager in Washington for almost a decade now, since 2014. How is he going to go out and resolve that goaltending situation? Is this a function of a deadline deal where they're going to have to acquire somebody? Zach Fucale had that great stretch, about a week ago. I mean, but to expect him to all of a sudden be the solution come playoff time, a rookie goalie who's played 4 games in the NHL, that's not realistic. So how does that get resolved if it's not internally with Samsonov and Vanecek?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a trade deadline situation. I think the Capitals have always gone out at the trade deadline and looked at least for defensemen. That's how they got Michael Kempney and, Nick Jensen and other guys like that. But I really do think this year it's probably like a bottom six forward, a scoring forward, and it's a goaltender. I think obviously everyone wants Marc-Andre Fleury on their team. I don't think that's any secret. I know the Capitals probably want him as well. So all of those big veteran guys, they're probably going to go after. McClellan's always very smart about assets and draft picks and giving up a lot of draft picks for guys. So I would anticipate some type of trade deadline deal if one of these goaltenders can't step up. But I really do think if Samsonov can step up and kind of lead the way. I'm not exactly sure they're going to be completely confident and Vanecek is the guy.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Samantha Pell of the Washington Capitals. The Jets into Washington come Tuesday night to face the Caps for the second time in about a month. It was in December where Washington came into Winnipeg on that Friday night, the night the Jets had the coaching change and defeated the Jets.
Yeah, Samantha, I wanted to ask you about Nicklas Backstrom because obviously, he's only got into a few games this year. He waits so long to get back into the lineup and then, he's back out. I'm not sure if it's COVID related or if it's something else related. It probably, most likely is COVID related. But how impressive has it been that the Capitals have been so consistent all year long? Obviously, the wins haven't been coming as much as they were maybe a few weeks ago, but I mean, this is your second line center, a guy who's obviously been, along with Alex Ovechkin, the face of the franchise for so long now. But I guess, do we have an update on when he's going to return to the lineup? And a thought on, how his absence, seems to not have affected the Capitals maybe as much as you think it would.
Yeah, I think first with Nick, I think he's only played like 4 or 5 games this season. He just came back. So it was the injury. He was on LTI because of that hip injury. He finally gets back, plays in his first game in Chicago. The next day ends up on the COVID list for 10 days. So then he didn't go to Winnipeg and ends up on the COVID list. He was about to come back. And I believe he played maybe 2 more games and he got the flu. So then he's out for, I think it was another 3 games. And then he finally gets back, plays in another game. And then here we are. So he should be back in the lineup. He looks good to go. I mean, it's just a tough ride. Right? It's really just bad luck for Nick, honestly. You have such a kind of horrible rehab situation where you have to go through all offseason and in a training camp through the season. And then now you're kind of up and down and you can never really find a rhythm. So I think for him, he's still trying to find his game. Honestly, I don't think he looks like he's 100% back as Nicklas Backstrom, but it's going to take some time. At least when Nick was gone, I think it was all about kind of the young kids. Obviously Ovechkin and Kuznetsov had a really great duo to start. Without them, they probably wouldn't be here. But it was kind of guys like Connor McMichael or Hendrix Lapierre had that really great debut and, kind of contributed where he could. Alexei Protas is, this 6'5 Belarusian guy who comes in and all of a sudden can play really big minutes. So I think overall they just, for some reason, had really good luck with their young kids. But now when you look at the second half of the season, it has to be about your vets. And guys like Backstrom and Oshie and Kuznetsov all have to kind of step it up again.
Ms. Samantha, one of the guys we have to talk about is Tom Wilson. And you just wrote about him in the Washington Post and, you know, how he was disappointed about what's happening with the Olympic team. But, you know, he's the kind of player, I think every team says, I hate that guy until he's on your team. And then everybody goes, I love that guy. He's the best.
Yeah.
So how much fun did you have writing that article? And what did you kind of learn in terms of, the Tom Wilson?
Yeah, so I've been around this team now for 3 years. It's my third season covering it solely, I guess, by myself. And I think from the very beginning, I've said that I thought Tom Wilson was just very misunderstood from the beginning, at least to my face directly, dealing with reporters, dealing with media, the way I've seen him interact with, you know, kids or family behind the scenes. It always seems like he's maybe kind of like a Brad Marchand. Like, I think everyone, at least in Washington, is always looking at him and being like, oh, like, he's basically the Tom Wilson of that team and how he interacts. But I mean, I had a lot of fun with him. I think I've interviewed him a lot over the years about kind of his evolution. And obviously, whenever he gets a suspension or hits, like, you can never justify that, right? As a writer, like, we're not supposed to be advocating for the players that we're covering. It's more, let's put this out. Let's make sure it's fair on both sides. Tom gets his kind of say. Everyone else has their kind of say. But when you listen to Tom and how he explains things and how he genuinely does want to change his game and change how he hits, and he doesn't go out every single game with malicious intent. He just maybe makes some bad decisions at some very bad times. So I think overall, like, he's a really great, respectable guy. He's only 27, which I think people maybe forget. Like, he's still pretty young, and this is his ninth season in the league, and he's already won a cup, was on the long list for Team Canada. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of do this story of, hey, like, his name was actually in the mix, and it caused a huge stir on Twitter, but here we are, and maybe we see him down the line. But I do think his game is evolving, and he's a top six guy, and he works really well on the top line next to Ovi and Kuznetsov.
Samantha, we'll let you go on this final question. You mentioned Kuznetsov. I mean, a fantastic scorer, inconsistent, can disappear sometimes in big moments. Is that ever going to change, or is that just who he is at this stage in his career? A guy who is effective, but not necessarily a guy you can count on night in and night out.
I feel like it's the same story with Kuznetsov, really, since the Cup. Is he's going to be an X factor for the Capitals, whether he's on or whether he's off. And to start the year, it felt like he was very on, right? People were saying, oh my God, it's 2018 Kuznetsov. He's back. He's engaged. I talked to him pretty early in the season. I think it was in Ottawa. And he said, look, like, I know a lot of people criticized my play last year. I know that people thought that I was lazy and I got COVID twice and I was really irresponsible and it was all my fault. But he's like, I feel like it was unfair to judge how I played statistically last season because of everything. He's a very energy guy. He, as lame as it sounds, like, he hated playing in empty arenas. He likes the energy. He likes to kind of the showboatiness or the kind of show-offiness, and he likes to perform for a crowd. So I think overall his game last year, he kind of wants to throw it away and he wanted to start fresh this year. And I think now maybe it's the kind of the same as Ovechkin. Their play is kind of both maybe tampered off a little bit in the last couple of weeks. He doesn't really show up as much, but he's still getting on the score sheet. So I think for him, yeah, it's always just going to be a mentality of, does he want to play tonight or does he not? And I'm not sure if that's going to go away.
Sorry, Samantha, just one final question, because obviously the All-Star Game participants were announced recently. Alex Ovechkin, as you know, and for those who are watching or listening, don't know, Ovechkin has been named the captain. And obviously, as you've reported, Kuznetsov is a guy that's in for the last man in. But, you mentioned Brad Marchand, and obviously he was snubbed. I don't know how Sidney Crosby isn't going to the All-Star game, but obviously John Carlson, who's tied for fifth in defenseman scoring, is obviously not going. But, I mean, we know that not everybody could go to the All-Star game. But specifically about Ovechkin, have you talked to him, or do we know if he's going to play? Because he's a guy that he's been to a bunch of All-Star games, but he's a guy in the past that, has decided not to go, which is obviously his right. And we're not sure this year if they're going to take away that or waive the one-game suspension. But is the expectation that because, he's the captain and obviously the Olympics aren't happening, that he's going to go this year?
Yeah, so he skipped the last two. Last year they didn't have one, obviously, because of COVID. So he skipped the last two. He's taken the one-game penalty. It really hasn't mattered to him. He cited rest. He didn't want to go. This year, the notion was at the beginning of the year, he was going to go 100% because of the Olympics, right? Like, guys were going to go to the All-Star game. You hop on a charter and you go to Beijing and then you come back. Now with no Olympics, I think it's a little bit more up in the air. But everything that Washington's kind of pushed to us. Ovechkin talked yesterday. He said he was excited. Like, oh, you know, all the top players are going to be there, but like, we'll see due to my health, like got to take care of that first. So I think there obviously is still a little bit of wiggle room. He could decide last minute, like, hey, something popped up, this nagging injury that's kind of been bugging him for the last couple of weeks might just come up. But I think for now he wants to go and he probably will go, but then again, it's Ovechkin and he can probably do whatever he wants. So we might see him back out last minute.
That's the same nagging injury that's been keeping me from the All-Star game all these years as well. There's Samantha.
Exactly. Same. They didn't invite me either, so I don't know.
Samantha Pell covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. The Caps are in action today and tomorrow before the Jets meet them on Tuesday night in the U.S. nation's capital. Samantha, thanks so much for your time this morning. Appreciate your insight. Look forward to reading your gamers today, tomorrow, and of course on Tuesday.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Take care. There she goes. Samantha Pell joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Couple minutes left to go. Quick update from the Jets practice. It officially doesn't get underway until 11 a.m., but some early birds are on the ice. Namely, Logan Stanley, Ville Heinola, and Christian Reichel are on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets before
the COVID practice group
begins.
Courtesy of
Mitchell Clinton and IllegalCurve.com.
No,
Mitchell Palooza.
Mitchell Clinton's the one who's reporting.
Okay, I just wanted to.
My boy Mitch.
You so often are looking for praise for your own work. No, I was unsure where you were going.
The practice report will not be up until after 11. So no, this is.
You do look for praise, Dave.
I mean, I do thrive on praise, so that's fine.
Yes, praise me. Tell me I'm good.
You can't just love teach me, praise. Love you, either have praise or you don't have praise. It's definitely not something you can acquire.
Yes, that's very good, Elaine. That was a Seinfeld reference there by Mr. Ginsburg. So we'll keep an eye for the next 12 minutes or so on Winnipeg Jets practice. But
that means those are the guys who were done, who went in on the 11th.
Right.
Which, you know, so they just need the two negative tests. Then they can exit the protocol. So the reality is that means that obviously if Ehlers is able to go, he'd be eligible as well to get out. So you could see a glut of guys on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets starting today.
Yeah, and you know, it's
and now I'll go with the plug. You can go to IllegalCurve.com, check out the practice report once we're done, mm-hmm. Get the full 411.
And of course, the Jets have, you know, they practice today. Clearly, they're going to practice, I would assume, on Monday before they head out to Washington. They'll be we'll see tomorrow if they're going to practice or not, or if they give the Jets
it's already day off. Yeah.
There you go. So the Jets.
These guys got to have a day off. I mean, come on, they got to relax a little bit. Watch a little NFL football. Come on,
four games
they did yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Four games in a month. They need time to rest up. But I mean, again, the timing has been so fortuitous. I just want to say Blake Wheeler is going to be out of the Jets lineup whenever he comes back. He's going to miss so many fewer games than everyone expected. I mean, you know, he probably should have missed upwards of, you know, 15 games or something. Instead, he's going to miss somewhere between, you know, five, four and maybe eight games for the Jets instead of 15 to 20. So a huge, whatever you think about Blake Wheeler and a player, the Jets are better off with him in the lineup. Maybe not necessarily in that top line right wing role, but they're better off with him in the lineup than with some of the other guys. And the fact he's only going to miss a handful of games as opposed to a quarter of the season is huge for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I was just going to say tonight, I was looking at the amount of games because obviously most of us are not really going out these days. I think there's 13 NHL games. There's 12 or 13 games tonight. So it's just nice to see a full schedule because I think last night there were only two, if I'm not mistaken, two or three games. And obviously Saturday is usually a heavier schedule, but just love that. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that, you know, watch a lot of hockey. The Jets obviously aren't playing tonight, but it's good. Saturdays to me should always feature, you know, at least 10 games or whatever. So just going back to that kind of idea of normalcy, the Jets have four games next week and we're starting to get slowly back into this. Omicron's not going to be here forever.
There you go. Medic the positivity. There are a couple 7 spots put up in last night's games. The Florida Panthers, who looked terrific, put 7-1 beating on
Barkov.
The Dallas
didn't have
Stars.
Any of those goals. I don't know how that works, but
is that your way of saying you have them in a hockey pool?
No, I don't. I wish I did. I had them last year, I think. I don't have any Panthers, but this is definitely not the year to be Pantherless in your hockey pool because they're arguably the best team in the league right now.
It's true. And then the Minnesota Wild 7-3 over the Anaheim Ducks last night. So another impressive
I do have Trevor Zegras, though. I have Zegras in my pool. He's been fantastic. Scored another goal, 10th.
The Wild scored 2 goals in 4 seconds in last night's game against the Ducks, which is not very easy to do. A quick goal by Matthew Boldy, and then a bang bang by Matt Zuccarello 4 seconds later, and you knew what kind of night it was going to be for the Anaheim Ducks when that kind of
still need one more though to get in the Billy Mozienko conversation though.
It's true. It's close. I mean, 2 goals in 4 seconds for a team is as fast as you can do it. The Jets did that against Derek the Edmonton Quinn. Oilers. And Joaquin Gage was the goaltender for the Oilers back in Jets 1.0, if you remember that famous incident.
I remember listening to that game on the radio as a kid. I don't know how old we would have been. I mean, 11 or 12 or 10 or something.
No, I think we would have been a little bit older, but I was having a sleepover at a buddy's house and we were watching the game. I remember that. I remember that vividly for whatever reason.
We didn't have a TV back then, Drew, so I just had the radio. My dad was still trying to, you know, put some money together for, I'm joking, but I used to, that's the way it used to be, right? I think that game probably would have been on CKNB or something like that.
Yeah, not that many games were on TV back in the day. Speaking of the Oilers, let's talk about the idea that Evander Kane is set or close, or maybe if the NHL clears him, going to join the Edmonton Oilers. You know, is that the? I mean, last time I checked, Evander Kane didn't play goaltender, and Evander Kane doesn't have a track record of success come playoff time. So, why, in your perspective, do you think the Oilers are so hot and heavy for Evander Kane?
Well, and the thing is, guys, unfortunately, you can't talk about Evander Kane and not talk about all the off-ice stuff, right? Because that's really plagued him. But, I mean, I think, you know, we have talked about it a little bit on this show, certainly, and they definitely talk about it in San Jose. But last year, he was unbelievable. I mean, the Sharks had a terrible year, but last year, he was nearly a point-a-game player, right? I think it was 49 points in 56 games, 27 goals, something like that, right? Or, sorry, 22 goals, 27 assists. I'm just pulling it up here, but I mean, he was great. So this is not a guy who's washed up. That's not the issue here. I think the issue is that everything.
There's no question about the talent.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think what was more interesting were Connor McDavid's comments about Evander Kane, because we should mention it's not official yet, but, you know, Tim Peel all of a sudden is breaking news as an ex-official. I don't know what's going on with that, but Tim Peel, I think, was the first guy that mentioned that the Oilers were going to sign Kane. So we should mention it's not official yet, but it looks like, you know, Ken Holland and the Oilers have signed him, I presume, a one-year contract. I don't think he's going to get, like, a five-year deal or anything like that. So, I mean, look, I think one of the reasons as well, in addition to his goal scoring, guys, I think they like the toughness, right? Like Kane is a guy that not only, you know, can he throw the weight around, he can drop the gloves if he needs to. So I think, you know, guys like McDavid and Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl, those guys, I think, like to have that type of player, right? I think that's one of the reasons why Zach Cassian, you know, has been an Oiler for so long. They like, you know, his ability to basically, you know, create a little bit of chaos, throw those big checks, drop the gloves, even though Cassian is a guy that can put the puck in the net. So look, I'm surprised that the Oilers of all teams, because their biggest need is in goal right now. And we mentioned Mike Smith's going to be out of the lineup a little bit. So Mikko Koskinen is still there. But I mean,
I was going to say, Ezzy, I think Mike Smith being out of the Oilers lineup might be a blessing in disguise if they finally let Stuart Skinner, you know, take the opportunity and actually be the number one guy and see what they have in him. Their insistence on trying to use Smith and Koskinen over Skinner when Skinner, albeit in a very small sample size, has far better numbers, just is perplexing to me.
Well, and it makes sense, right? Because like Smith and Koskinen, I mean, these are guys that in theory you could bury in the American Hockey League, especially Koskinen's contract. But obviously, you know, when they re-signed Mike Smith, because Koskinen before this season was already under contract, you knew that's who they were going with. And Stuart Skinner was third on the depth chart. Speaking of, you know, guys like Chisholm and Sandberg, where they are in the depth chart, but injuries happen and poor goaltending has happened. Like that's the issue last year. And the previous few years, Mike Smith has kind of defied age, right? Like he's continued to play well. Not saying he's a top 10 goalie season in the NHL. I'm just saying that, you know, especially going back to the bubble, right? Like that year, he was really solid. So getting back to Evander Kane, though, Drew, I mean, I think whether we like it or not, and I think there's a lot of reasons to not like it. Like I mentioned, like off ice, Kane has had a bad track record. And then speaking of track suits, and then you hear that he went and entered Canada, you know, lying about having COVID. So, I mean, it continues to kind of plague him. It just seems like it's one thing after the other. But if you want to look at it kind of glass half full, maybe, you know, a guy like Duncan Keith, Connor McDavid, these guys can have a good influence on him. And Kane just focuses on hockey and he becomes like a big part of the Oilers. I'm just skeptical based on what happened in Buffalo, based on what happened, you know, in San Jose, based on what happened in Winnipeg. You just wonder, like, is this guy going to be able to keep it all together and just focus on hockey and not become a distraction?
Yeah, it's a good question. Dave, want your opinion on that. But first, another update from Jets practice. Nikolaj Ehlers and Nathan Beaulieu also on the ice for the Jets as practice gets underway momentarily. So clearly, the Jets are getting back to health. And
that's non-contact, though, right, Drew?
Doesn't say anything about
full contact.
It doesn't say anything about special jerseys or anything. Both those guys are clearly out of COVID protocol. So the Jets are going to look more closely like the Jets, it looks like, for the upcoming road trip, which is certainly important because the four games they have upcoming are all against teams currently residing in a playoff spot, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the old Logan Stanley obviously was, as he was saying, was day to day. So he was, I'm assuming we don't know. I mean, we're just reading it on Twitter, but obviously if he's nobody's indicated that he's in a non-contact uniform. So you'd think that he's ready to go because he was day to day with a lower body injury along with Paul Stastny.
He might've also been in COVID protocol. And we just don't know. Well, it seems like everybody was.
Just to clarify though, Dave, Stanley and Stastny are the only two that aren't in COVID protocol, I believe, right? All the other players.
No. Stastny is currently in protocol.
Sorry, it's not Stastny. Stanley, and who's the other one I'm thinking of here?
Well, no. So, Ezzy, there's a million. But Stanley was in COVID. So Stanley was day-to-day with a lower body injury. Then he was put into COVID protocol. So he had kind of the...
But now he's out of it.
But now he's out of it and he's skating. Right.
So and then which guys are currently out of COVID protocol?
So it looks like Ehlers, because I'm reading it. Ehlers is out. I think Reichel, Stanley,
Heinola,
and there's one, and Beaulieu. So you got five of the Jets had eight players plus obviously Wade Flaherty. Now they've got three, which makes sense. Stastny, Dylan
Connery,
The three that are in it, and you've got Wade Flaherty. So yeah, like Drew said, you've got five guys out of COVID protocol. That's a good thing, and on the ice, and we'll see what happens in terms of, you know, especially with Logan Stanley. Are they going to send one of Chisholm or Sandberg, and with Beaulieu healthy? I mean, you have to start figuring out they have a lot of cap space, obviously, and they can assign guys to the taxi squad. But what are you going to do, right? Because you're going to have I'm imagining today's going to be a long practice because they didn't practice yesterday, which is great because shout out to our photographer, Alexander James. He's going to be at the practice today shooting for us, which is great. Refilling the illegalcurve.com media library. I call it a media library, but yes, sure. The photography library.
The archives. As well.
The archives. So we're going to have a bunch of new pictures courtesy of Alex. So that's fantastic. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, the Moose are playing tonight in Grand Rapids, the second game of this is their fifth game on the road. So we'll see what happens in terms of getting any of those players back. I don't think they'll get them back for tonight, obviously. They'll probably just roll with the same lineup they used last night where they lost in OT. And then they go off to Iowa to play.
What happened, Dave? The Moose aren't supposed to lose.
I know, but they were actually up. It was a 2-1 game. Evan Cormier got the start. Arvid Holm has been dealing with, obviously he was in COVID protocol and then he was on the taxi squad. So they gave Evan Cormier the start. I'm assuming that because Mikael Burden is up with the Jets on the, well, right now he's on the taxi squad. So it's very hard to get.
Who's the backup? Peter Menino?
What's that?
No, Peter Menino the backup?
Arvid Holm was the backup. But I'm assuming Arvid Holm will get the start tonight. And then the Jets, the Moose will be off to Iowa to play a future Team Canada Olympian, Eric Staal in the Iowa Wild, to round out the road trip.
Last note from practice. Did you say go Cornhuskers? That's Nebraska, right. Dummy, not Iowa.
Oops. Iowa
State is the Iowa is the Hawkeyes and Iowa State are the Cyclones. Yeah, so those are the two
schools. Go Cornhuskers.
Go Cornhuskers in Nebraska. There you go. Just one last note from practice. Logan Stanley and Nathan Beaulieu are both wearing blue jerseys and appear to be skating with the Jets forwards, whereas Heinola, Chisholm, and Sandberg are wearing red jerseys worn by the defensemen. So that's something, again,
well, keep an eye on that. So.
Well, I know, but so are the other two guys who are playing forward. I wonder if it's, you know, as everybody gets back to health, if you might be seeing some changes to the back end of the Jets' blue line. You'll probably know more clearly with Monday's practice than today's. Yeah. As everybody,
you heard it here first. Their... Logan Stanley is being turned into a power forward by the Jets.
Put him in front of the net a la Dustin Byfuglien in Chicago, right? There you go. That does it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to everybody who joined us. If you missed any of the show, it's available for an instant replay here on our YouTube channel. Also, the podcast will be ready very quickly. So subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, smash the like button. That's what we ask of you. Big thank you to our friends, Paul Edmonds and Samantha Pell, for joining us for insight on the Jets and the Washington Capitals, respectively. We always appreciate hearing from them. A big thank you to our sponsors. They make this show. They make the post-game show. They make the website a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and our friends at Grid Park support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey.
I was trying to show the fireball there.
There you go. Yeah, you can see it says fireball above your head there. A reminder that on Tuesday night, the Illegal Curve post-game show will come your way after the Jets and the Capitals. So be sure to set a reminder for that so you don't miss a minute of the great content we have coming your way next week, which will be a very busy week for the Winnipeg Jets and for all of us here at Illegal Curve. Thanks
so much. Clear your schedule, Drew.
My schedule's clear. Don't worry about that. My big thank you to everybody for joining us. A great time in the chat room as well. Thanks for your continued support. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.